Ever think about, like how a problem that's shared can affect a really huge and diverse group of people?
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, when we're talking about like law and how markets work, I mean, it's a big puzzle.
It is a really big puzzle.
Yeah.
And it kind of gets a, a central challenge for our legal system. How do we deal with, potential harm, widespread harm,
Right.
in a way that's both fair and also manageable,
Got
even
it.
if the specifics of how that harm plays out look really different for different people?
Yeah. And that is exactly what we are going to get into today. So we're talking class action lawsuits, right?
Right.
Specifically looking at them through antitrust law. You know, class actions, they're the legal system's way of grappling with, these situations where a lot of people might have been affected by the same alleged bad act.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. And to really dig into this, we're going to be focusing on a really key case, Blades v. Monsanto Co. It's from the Eighth Circuit back in 2005. And you know what I think is so fascinating about this case is it gives us such a good view into how tough it is to prove that a large and diverse group of people were actually harmed by the same root cause, even when their individual situations on the surface level look pretty different.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So our goal today is to unpack this case, Blades v. Monsanto, and pull out those important lessons about this really crucial legal idea,
Yeah.
predominance when it comes to certifying a class action.
Right.
So we want to understand, what does it take to show that common legal or factual questions are actually, more important than those individual ones? And then what does that mean for proving harm across this diverse group, right? This is a huge group. So let's get into it. What were the farmers actually alleging in this case?
Right.
What was the core of their complaint?
So at the heart of it all was this claim that Monsanto, they orchestrated this big conspiracy with some other major players in the seed industry.
Okay.
You see companies like Pioneer and Syngenta, Aventis, all mentioned in the case.
Oh, wow.
And the allegation was that they all worked together to drive up the prices of genetically modified, or we can call them GM corn and soybean seeds.
Right.
The main way they supposedly did this was through something called technology fees that were attached to these GM traits, right?
Okay.
So the idea was these fees were artificially raising the baseline cost of the GM seeds. But what makes it even more interesting, as we'll see, is the fact that the companies that are actually selling these seeds down the line, they were setting their own final prices, which really complicates the picture of whether there was like a clear uniform price hike that hit every farmer the same way.
Yeah, so it's not like Monsanto was only licensing this
Right.
technology. They also became a major seed producer themselves, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
That just adds a whole nother layer of complexity to this whole thing.
It does.
And then who were these people who were actually trying to bring this suit forward? Like, who was in this proposed class?
Right. The class that they were trying to get certified was made up of farmers who directly purchased these GM seeds sometime between 1996 and 2005.
Wow.
So, huge group, potentially a lot of individuals involved in agriculture all across the country. And right away, you can see how this is a challenge,
Yeah.
trying to prove that there was a consistent harm across all these different farmers who are making purchasing decisions over almost a decade.
Right.
Who knows how much the market shifted in that time?
Okay, so you've got all these farmers. They're saying that they overpaid for seeds because of this agreement that was going on in the background. But this is where we get to that legal hurdle you were talking about, right?
Yeah.
Rule 23B3.
Yeah.
Can you unpack that for us? What is that? And why was it such a big deal in this case?
Yeah, so this is the central point. Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 23, that sets out all the rules that have to be met in order for a class action to get certified.
Okay.
So you know a group of people who have kind of similar claims can all sue together.
Right.
And Rule 23B3 is like a specific part of that rule that applies when the class is looking for money damages.
Okay.
So one of the things that it requires, among other things, is that questions of law or fact common to the class members, they have to predominate over any questions that only affect individual members.
Okay.
And that's where the whole predominance requirement comes from. And this is where Blades v. Monsanto really hit a wall. The court had to decide if these common questions like, did Monsanto and all these other companies actually conspire together were more important than the individual questions?
Okay.
Like, how much did each specific farmer actually overpay?
Right.
And this predominance requirement, it's not just some technicality. It's there to make sure that class actions actually are efficient and fair.
Right.
you know, they have to focus on these widespread issues rather than just being a collection of individual, totally different disputes that all happen to involve the same defendant.
So in this case, you know, the farmers, they argued that there was this common conspiracy going on.
Right.
But the court didn't think that was enough to meet that, you know, standard of predominance.
Right.
So why did the Eighth Circuit ultimately side with that lower court and say that commonality, you know, it didn't outweigh those individual issues here?
So the Eighth Circuit, the reason they sided with the lower court really had to do with the fact that the market for these GM seeds, it wasn't uniform, you know, it wasn't all the same.
Right.
And that's where it gets so interesting.
Yeah.
They pointed out that the prices that farmers actually paid for these seeds, they varied a lot. And that was because of a whole bunch of factors that were specific to each farmer.
Okay.
You know, their own situation. Think of it kind of like buying different brands of coffee at different shops versus buying like a single nationally priced product, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a great analogy. Yeah, so can you give me some, you know, specific examples of what some of these factors are that made the pricing so different? What were they looking at?
Yeah, so first of all, there were negotiated discounts. So obviously, bigger farming operations, they might have had more power to negotiate better prices than, you know, a small family farm.
Right.
And then on top of that, you also have geographic location. That mattered a lot, probably because of stuff like transportation costs or the amount of competition between local seed dealers in different places.
Right.
And then even more than that, you have to think about the different farming practices. You know, what kind of crops is a farmer growing?
Right.
How big is their operation?
Right.
What are their specific needs? All that stuff could affect what kind of GM seed they bought, how much of it they bought, and obviously then the price they paid.
Yeah.
But here's maybe the biggest thing. The court actually pointed out that some farmers, they didn't pay any extra at all for GM seeds compared to the regular old non-GM seeds that were also out there at the time. So a lot of variation.
Yeah, that really undermines this idea that everybody was, you know, hurt in the same way.
Yeah.
Because if some farmers weren't paying any extra for these seeds, you can't really say that everybody in that class was harmed equally.
Exactly. And, you know, that takes us to a really crucial distinction that the court made. You know, they said there's a difference between this agreement to possibly fix prices, like the conspiracy itself.
Right.
And the actual harm or injury that came out of that.
Okay.
You know, Judge Bright, he wrote this in the court's opinion, and it's a really key quote here. He said, "The mere act of agreeing to fix prices violates antitrust law."
Right.
"But the performance of the conspiracy goes to result in injury, which requires individualized proof here."
Yeah.
So that really gets to the heart of the issue.
Okay, so let's unpack that quote a little bit. So the court wasn't saying that there was no way this conspiracy happened.
Right.
But even if it did happen, proven that every single farmer in this class actually lost money because of it, and figuring out exactly how much each person lost.
Yeah.
That would mean having to look at each farmer's individual purchases and all the details around those transactions.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, proven the conspiracy actually existed, that might involve common evidence, you know, maybe internal company documents, stuff like that.
Right.
But proven the injury, that each farmer paid more because of the conspiracy, that ends up being a really individualized thing. And, you know, that's because of all these market factors we talked about.
Yeah.
Discounts, locations, all that.
Right.
So all these different factors, obviously that played a huge role in how the court viewed whether the injury itself could be proven across the entire class. That's why you have this crucial distinction.
Yeah. So I'd imagine the plaintiffs in this case, they tried to get around that hurdle by bringing in some expert testimony.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
To try to show that there really were class-wide damages.
Exactly. Their expert, he tried to make the case that the conspiracy led to this uniform overcharge, that it affected everybody in the class. But the Eighth Circuit wasn't convinced.
Right.
They found the methods that the expert was using, they said they weren't reliable enough to prove that everyone was overcharged in the same way.
Okay.
And especially not to prove that it affected all these farmers consistently, you know, with all those differences we were talking about.
Right.
And that just goes to show how important it is to have really good expert analysis, especially at this early stage when they're trying to decide if the class should be certified.
Right.
The court has to be convinced that there's a legit, legally sound way to prove harm to the whole class using evidence that applies to everyone.
Okay, so even if Monsanto and the other companies did have this agreement about the technology fees,
mm-hmm.
the way those licensing agreements were set up, The way it worked was that the companies that were actually selling the seeds could set their own final prices. Mm. So because of that, it made it really hard to draw a direct line between the collusion that supposedly happened with the technology fees to a price increase that all the farmers paid.
Yeah, that's a key part of what the court was thinking about, because the companies selling the seeds downstream, they had some wiggle room, right? They could adjust the prices based on their own costs and what the market was doing and what their competitors were doing. So the impact of that alleged price fixing with the technology fees, it wasn't necessarily uniform.
Right.
And it wasn't automatically and directly reflected in the final price that each individual farmer paid.
Okay.
There were just too many other factors affecting each farmer's individual transaction. It was really hard to tie it all back to that initial conspiracy.
So for our listeners out there, you know, for the learner, what would you say is the most important takeaway from all of this? What's the big lesson that Blades v. Monsanto teaches us about how hard it is to get these antitrust class actions certified?
I think the core lesson here is, in an antitrust class action, it's not enough to just point to something that might have been wrong.
Right.
You know, something that affected a lot of people. You got to be able to show that the harm, the actual damage that came from that wrongdoing, that can be proven with evidence that applies to the whole class. When you have all these individual factors in the mix, especially when you're talking about price and damages, it can make it incredibly difficult to get that class certified. The court needs to see a clear path to prove an injury for the entire class, not just establishing that maybe there was a violation at some higher level.
So to sum up that central point, Blades v. Monsanto really shows us that even though there might be a common thread, in this case it was the alleged conspiracy between the seed companies, the reality is the market is really diverse, and the individual deals that happened in that market, that can actually prevent a class action from going forward if you can't prove that everybody was injured by that common thread. You know, you can't just use common evidence. It has to outweigh all those individual differences.
Exactly. And it really highlights how important that predominance requirement is in Rule 23b3.
Yeah.
It's like a gatekeeper for these class action lawsuits.
You know, it makes you wonder, thinking about this case and what the court decided, what other situations are out there, maybe in different industries, not just agriculture, where it might be just as hard to prove that there was harm when everyone experienced it so differently. And then on the flip side, what kind of information or what kind of market conditions would actually make it easier to argue that there was a common injury and everyone was affected the same way?
Those are great questions to think about. And I think this case really pushes us to think critically about how we can actually deal with this problem of widespread harm when the impact is different for different people or different businesses.
Yeah.
It also makes you think, you know, what kind of markets or what kind of data would let us show that there was a common impact, maybe in cases where pricing is more standardized or where there's a clear link between what went wrong and the harm that resulted. Not as many individual factors confusing things.
Absolutely. Well, this deep dive into Blades v. Monsanto has really been insightful. It gives us a great look at how complex these class action lawsuits can be, and it reminds us how important Rule 23 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure is. I think if anyone's interested in learning more about this, they should definitely dig into Rule 23 and really get into the details of antitrust law.
Yeah. I agree.
Thanks for breaking down this important case with us.
It's my pleasure. It's a case that's still really relevant today when you're thinking about how difficult it is to bring these antitrust class actions.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's important to be aware of it.
Thanks again.
You're welcome.